Mark Herman, Adam Hogue.
Chicago Sports Conversation.
Wide, wide world of sports.
This is The Beat.
Good afternoon, 720 WGN. The Beat is on. What did you text me today, Andy Mays? What was your text?
Hey, we got The Beat.
We got The Beat, baby.
Everybody, Adam, get on your feet.
Adam Hogue is out at Ryan Field, or will be in a matter of moments. We're going to talk to him at 4:35. Little Bears pregame, little Wildcat pregame. Wildcats in Duke tonight. Dave Ennett on the call starting at 6:30. Andy and I are with you until then. And the Chicago Cubs, as you well know, are in the playoffs, which basically when did you get an idea that there was not going to be any way they weren't going to be, like, week two of the season, basically?
Well, yeah, I mean, when they got off that tremendous start, I mean, you would be a fool to think they could have kept up the pace that they did. And yeah, they went through that little lull before the All-Star break in Pittsburgh, but they won the last game before that was a big game.
I think that was the biggest game of the year.
They came, and Rizzo had a big game in that, had a big final weekend of the first half.
They had lost, 9 of 10 at that point. They were
losing games, unlike the fact that they were losing all year. They were losing them late.
Yep.
They were making errors, which they don't do. And, there was a little bit of concern, but then there was 4 days off, and everybody was refreshed, and they came out of the gate swinging.
Yeah, they won that final Sunday. I just remember Rizzo catching the final out in that game at first and giving it a solid fist bump. Like, that game had more meaning.
It did.
And then they rolled right out of the All-Star break and now sitting at 94-53 and playing right now, but if anything happens, and there's really no big interest going on right now with everything clinched, obviously, but we'll keep you up to date on the Cubs and Brewers. Arrieta on the mound today, which is an interesting talking point. Like, everyone is sitting here saying John Lester, game one, and that's, I get it, he deserves it. But I don't think they win the World Series unless Jake Arrieta pitches like he did last year. He's got to find. I'd like to see in the last couple of starts here that he's on the money.
And I think this is an interesting point to bring up too. I mean, you look at the games that are coming up now. You've got a little more than 2 weeks left to go in the regular season.
Right.
You can't skip guys. I mean, they're still going to go through the 6-man rotation to give a guy an extra day here and there, which is fine. I'm good with that. These are almost kind of like spring training games where you're getting a pitcher out there and you're getting him work, facing live hitting.
Yep. No one's going to throw more than 100 pitches.
No. And I'm good with that.
Yeah, no, that's the plan, and it makes sense. It's an unprecedented spot that they're in right now. 2 weeks to go in the season, you can do whatever you want,
right.
And also remember, the division series doesn't start until Friday.
Correct.
So you have, I can do the math here, which is not really math, but you have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday off.
Completely.
There's going to be a wild card team, a game played, so two teams are going to play. Mm-hmm. They're going to be on the field. You're going to have 10 toes up on the couch. Mm-hmm. And everything's going to be set up. You're going to be well rested. They're going to have workouts that whole week. I mean, their burnout should not be a factor really going in at all.
No, and that's the thing that you credit. And a lot of people that aren't familiar with the sport of baseball will always wonder, how much does the manager really influence a team? How many games could a manager win? You know, I'm going to tell you something right now. This guy that they have in the dugout right now is responsible for a lot of wins, and not just because of strategy. During games, I'm talking about lineups. I'm talking about knowing when to rest a guy, knowing when to play a guy.
Well, and there's a creativity that Joe Maddon brings that you just wouldn't see from other managers. Like, oh, we've got this catcher down in the minors. Well, he's got nowhere to play. We need veterans, but we're trying to win right now. Actually, get him up here.
Yeah.
I'll throw him out in left field. I'll throw him out in right field.
Now, we'll give him a pinch hit, and he'll hit a home run in his first at bat.
Right. And the day before, he'll be on deck and get a standing O and not get up there. And then, you know, you get to yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. And I was reading Paul Sullivan's piece leading up to the game yesterday. Sully, of course, doing a great job covering the team forever for the Tribune. And he starts, you know, talking about Theo and how when he came in, how disgustingly bad they were trying to lose. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of the greatest signings in Cubs history, signing Edwin Jackson, the worst pitcher ever, who just, maybe you paid him a little bit too much money, but the guy just went out and lost, right? I go back, I read the quotes from Tuesday, October the 11th, when they hire Theo Epstein, right? Theo Epstein, I don't believe in curses. I guess I played a small part in proving they don't exist from a baseball standpoint. I do think we can be honest and upfront that certain organizations haven't gotten the job done. That's the approach we took in Boston. We identified certain things that we hadn't been doing well that might have gotten in the way of World Series and eradicated them. And that's what we'll do here. And he's done all of it. Every single damn one. Everything he said he was going to do, he did. It's unbelievable.
It's
we
funny.
Can go through the list in a second, but it's unbelievable.
It's funny you bring that press conference up because it was 2011, right?
Yep.
October?
Yeah.
And I had come back to spend some time with my family because I wasn't living in San Diego. I was covering the Padres, working for them. And I'm watching this press conference going, man, I am jealous
right?
of you guys right now because this was my team, and now I'm working for the Padres, and I'm, right. of course, you know, employed by the team at that point. But I couldn't help but sit there and think, man, these guys are going to be good. They're going to be really good.
Right. I mean, you knew it then, and just looking back on it, it just reminds you. When I got to Boston, they hadn't won in 86 years. We didn't run from the challenge. We embraced it. We decided the way to attack was to build the best baseball operation that we could to try to establish a winning culture, ding, to work as hard as possible to bring players in who care more about each other and more about winning than the people around them thought or external expectations, ding.
Ding, ding.
I mean, this is a clubhouse of guys that...
They love each other.
Right. And he continues on, that's something that's going to be important here as well, yes. We're going to build the best baseball operation we can. We're going to change the culture, ding.
Mm-hmm.
Our players are going to change the culture along with us in the Major League Clubhouse, ding. We're going to build a foundation for
sustainable. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to make building a foundation for sustained success a priority. Ding. I mean, look, I mean, it's unbelievable that will lead to playing in October baseball more often than not. And once you get in October, and there's a little legitimate chance to win the World Series.
And you know who else deserves a lot of credit for this that hasn't sought the credit, but should get it is Tom Ricketts.
Oh, no doubt.
And I'll tell you why. I know we got to hit a break here real quick, but I'll tell you that there are owners around baseball and around other sports that cannot stay out of the way. They always have to have their fingers in the pie. Yeah, okay, they sign the checks, but that's what they should do. Trust the people that you've hired. Trust the people that are supposed to know what they're talking about. Let them do it. Stay out of the way and write the checks.
Well, and the model franchise in this city right now is the Chicago Blackhawks with mm-hmm. three Stanley Cups in 7 years. What did Rocky Wirtz do? Let me go get the best guy out there who knows how to build an organization. I'll take you, John McDonough, and I'll make you the president.
And it's sustained.
Right. And now you go out and hire the best people.
I give the Ricketts and the Ricketts family, you know, him growing up a Cub fan, meeting his wife at Wrigley Field.
Right.
You know, hanging around the ballpark before he had anything to do with it. You know, that would worry me on some levels because, you know, that means, oh, I want to meddle with my team. But he hasn't, and I give him a ton of credit for it.
And the only meddling he does, and it's not meddling, but he's out there.
Well, he's out there because I think he's a good face for not the franchise, but just yet for the group, his family that owns the ball club to be human. They're humanized. You know, they're not hiding behind anything. He was out there when they were losing.
Every game. I mean, all the time. I don't know if it was every game, whatever, but you would see him all the time. And
absolutely.
The thing is, he's not Mark Cuban, who I enjoy, by the way, but he's not Mark Cuban, like, as far as, like,
right.
screaming at the
exactly.
players or the umpires or gaining attention. He's just, he sits in great seats. He owns the club. He shouldn't
yeah,
be sitting in the upper deck.
Good seats.
By the way, I love the upper deck at Wrigley. But he sits right down there. He cheers. He's nervous. You see it on his face.
It's real.
And, yeah, and he walks around, takes pictures with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's
refreshing.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really, really is. 312-981-7200. Should they build the Theo statue? There's one. And your playoff concerns, anything you want to talk about the Cubs, we'll do here. But coming back, I do want to play. First of all, Theo showed up in the bleachers yesterday, which is just...
It was awesome.
Which is incredible. And I was involved with a little conversation with Theo when he talked before the game. On whatever night it was this week, I don't remember.
Days are all running together,
yeah,
aren't they?
But it was interesting on whether he thinks the Cubs are the favorite in the playoffs or not. We'll hit that coming back here. 720, it's the beat, WGN. This is the beat. He's Andy Mazur. I'm Mark Carman. Adam Hogue will join us from Ryan Field at 4:35. Little Bears and the Eagles. The Eagles planning a little national anthem protest on Monday night. I wouldn't call it that. Let me rephrase that.
Mm-hmm.
The Eagles are joining Colin Kaepernick in trying to gain more attention to what's going on in the world on Monday night. They're not protesting the anthem. I take that's not at all what I meant. Thank you very much. I want the reframe. Text line real quick here. We're going to hear from Theo Epstein, who was sitting in the bleachers yesterday in disguise.
Awesome disguise, too.
When's the last time you were in the bleachers?
It's been a while.
Like, I legit can't stand the bleachers. I would never sit there. I'd never pick it.
You lose sight of some of what's going on because it's a show within a show.
I want a seat back. I want my own seat. I was talking to some diehards that were sitting out there and how they always sit in the same section in the last row. And get the, I was asking, why would you sit out there? Like, I'd rather be in the upper deck in the last.
It's their own sanctuary. That's what it is. Yeah,
it's not for me, but hey, to each his own. Hey, Carmen, John McDonough might be the nicest guy out there, but honestly, what did he ever win before joining the Blackhawks? Just wondering. He was the master of marketing. Andy, you can speak to this better than I can, but you're talking about
the inventor of the convention.
Right. It wasn't just about winning. They had to, the Blackhawks were completely irrelevant. So he had to not only hire the right people, but he also had to build a brand or re-engage a brand, however you want to put it.
Well, let's not forget, he wasn't team president until 2007 with the Cubs. And what did they do in 2007 and 2008?
And they were given more money to spend because they were selling the team. But at least like John McDonough's first press conference when he was named that, We're here to win the World Series.
Yeah.
I'm like, at least somebody said it. Mm-hmm. It was a different vibe even to that.
Agreed.
So, all right. I mean, I don't think I'm in a defense of the John McDonough, what he's done for the Blackhawks. That seems ridiculous. Yeah. Hey, Tom, before we get to Theo Epstein, you want to talk about Joe Maddon's effect? We want to talk to you. 312-981-7200. What's up, Tom?
Hey, Mark, you and Andy were talking about Maddon's approach, his effect on the team. I think it was Andy who said he's won a lot of games for them. Two remarks you guys made, that and Mark identifying the most important win of the year. First of all, on Maddon, a manager wins games in two ways. One's tangible, one's not. His strategy, the moves he makes, player personnel decisions, you can say that won them XYZ number of games. It's usually actually not a lot of games. It's a few, maybe, in a given year, especially with a team with this much talent. But he also sets the tone and handles problems. And a good manager surely is going to win a couple more. So 5-6 games here, that is, as Andy said, that's a lot of games. Don Zimmer was a terrible manager. He was an uptight guy. He has this wonderful, lovable Don Zimmer image. In fact, he was always in a lousy mood. People just didn't see it. He was very uptight, and his team played that way in the playoffs against the Giants that year. They did virtually nothing. And his other teams, he had contenders in Boston. They choked all the time because he couldn't handle pressure. He was terrible at it. Maddon is quite the opposite. And that does translate into wins, in my opinion. I agree with Andy. The guy has won a lot of games, either by strategy, 3 or 4, setting the tone, handling personnel, 2 or 3. That's a lot of games. As far as the most important game of the year, Mark, I think you're right. That last game before the All-Star break, people forget. You usually rest your all-stars. You got a big lead in the division. Cubs had a great first half. But because they were struggling, they were up 6.5. If they lose, they would have been up 5.5. And if they win, they're up 7.5. There's a big difference between 5.5 and 7.5. Maddon played all the regulars. He really needed to win that game. It was a desperation move almost, and it worked. They were up 7.5, big difference. So pretty interesting year. I think you guys are right on.
Tom, great call. Hey, before you go, let me just add on to, and I think you probably would agree with this, but a guy like Javi Baez, how do you use him? Where do you play him? When do you play him? Who are you resting him with? A lot of guys with Baez, and there was a big discussion, oh, he's not a Theo guy. He's a swing and miss guy. He doesn't have patience at the plate. I mean, they've used this guy perfectly, and that's Joe Maddon too, right?
Absolutely. And the front office plays a bigger role in that than we probably know because they have all their metrics and their research and all this business. And he clearly has worked very well with the front office on that. But ultimately, the decision is his. It has to be. And I think I've never seen a better example of a general manager and a manager and a front office, the GM and the president of baseball, Epstein and Hoyer. I've never seen them a combination work as well as these guys have. You know, It's not brain surgery, but one thing I've learned, you've mentioned the Blackhawks and the Cubs. When teams have been lousy or have only had a little bit of success here and there, and then all of a sudden they turn it around so clearly, it's always management. Look at the Bulls. Reinsdorf bought them. And brought in Krause. They turned around. The White Sox were a joke for years. Reinsdorf bought them. They contended more often than they ever had. The Cubs, blah, blah, blah. It's always management. It's management. And Ricketts, if you look at his bond trading business and his non-baseball business, he knows how to run a business. And that's what he's done here. I'm telling you guys, you got to have players, of course. But you can't even get there to get the players without management. It's all management, man. It's amazing how crappy the owners were of these teams before they got bought by new owners here in Chicago.
Tom, appreciate the call.
All right, guys.
There you go.
See you, Tom.
Man, sounds like he knows what he's talking about. Perhaps maybe he did some radio in this town at some point.
Maybe he did.
So he's right, though.
Yeah.
You got to have it at the top of the food chain. I would quibble with the Bulls part of it. If the Bulls had never inherited Michael Jordan, they would never have won one single title, and Jerry Krause proved that when Jordan left. I just want to get that out there.
And Rod Thorne drafted him.
Yeah.
Right. A no-brainer of the century. But you're kind of going back to Madden, too. There's an element of Madden. It's Ozzie Guillen-like, but it's Ozzie Guillen-light, where he deflects a lot of the attention away from the struggles or the success of his baseball team just by being him.
Yeah, and when they were in that down slide, he was positive the whole way. I've been around this a million times.
Exactly.
These things happen. It's a 162-game season. We're going to be great. We're totally fine. But I trust me. Believe me. I absolutely 100% believe that.
Yeah.
And the 773 texting in, so still have not won anything before. I guess some Cub fans consider making the playoffs. That's winning. LOL. Back-to-back going to the playoffs
was unheard of.
Is A, unheard of, and B, they're going to win 100-plus games, and C, you've got two MVP candidates, and D, you've got three Cy Young Award candidates, and E, they're young. If it goes nauseatingly terrible for the Cubs in the playoffs this year, barring injuries, they'll be back next year, too, and for the foreseeable future.
Am I understanding the texture correctly? Because I think that the question originally was, what did McDonough won before he came to the Blackhawks, and I wanted to say that, you know, he wasn't in a position to let them to make decisions on winning or losing until 2007, and in 2007 and in 2008 they went to the playoffs back-to-back years for the first time in however long it was, back to the 30s I think it was.
Somehow I think if John McDonough was the president of the Chicago Cubs in 1992, Greg Maddux wouldn't have left
for $500,000.
To the Atlanta Braves. The worst move in the history of the franchise. So, by the way, that flag flies up top Wrigley Field and it absolutely doesn't belong there. You don't deserve to fly the flag. You let Greg Maddux leave in his prime. I'm still bitter and always will be. Thank you very
much.
All right. Quick time. I will get into news. And then we'll get to Theo Epstein sitting in the bleacher. 720 WGN. WGN. Not a good day to be an Iowa Hawkeye fan, and breaking that to Iowa Hawkeye fans, myself included here. You lost to North Dakota State at home? 23-21. It's been an interesting day for the Big Ten. Colorado 2-0, but not ranked on top of Michigan right now. 21-7, second quarter. Oregon's leading Nebraska 8-7. Cats have Nebraska next Saturday night at Ryan Field. Wisconsin barely survived, now 0-3. Georgia State 23-17. North Dakota State goes into Iowa City, beats the number 13th ranked Hawkeyes 23-21. Kirk Ferentz just got an extension and apparently is hanging out at the Iowa City bars. Maybe he's at the Deadwood all week. Rutgers, great bar, by the way. Rutgers over in New Mexico. No one cares about that, but I'm saying it anyway. And there were protests around Penn State and Joe Paterno today. 34-27, the Nittany Lions beat Temple for your college football. Illinois and Western Michigan kicking off as well. So we'll keep you up to date on the Illini. Andy Mazur is here. I'm Mark Harmon. So this was Theo yesterday, who went incognito in the bleachers. Theo Epstein living the dream as Cubs president.
It's a good time. You know, the baseball ops staff, kind of, we made a deal that if we won the division, we'd watch the next game out from the bleachers, and made kind of a half-assed attempt to stay incognito, but it was fun. It's a blast out there. The fans are awesome. Great vantage point, Wrigley Field. What more could you want? So we're not going to make a habit of it, but maybe every year that we win the division, we'll try to do it the next day.
So, I mean, he
was the only one that dressed up.
He's unbelievable, man.
He had the Ernie Banks 14 blue cap on.
Great look.
He had the Try Not to Suck t-shirt.
Great shirt. Way to support.
He had sunglasses and a really bad fake mustache and soul patch.
Well, and he's very non-distinguishable, right? He looks like every single lawyer, accountant.
You remember what he did when he left Boston? He left Fenway Park in a gorilla suit so he didn't have to passed through the media when he was leaving Fenway for the last time.
And before he, you know, signing on the dotted line here, he was like spotted at
Starbucks and everywhere else. Exactly.
Right. But you don't really look at him. And even like, I mean, most baseball players, like let's pull up a Cubs roster.
Well, David Ross rode the L.
Right. I mean, Jim Riggleman used to ride the park. Jim Riggleman's 5'10 or 6 feet, whatever he is. I love Jim Riggleman. Love anytime I can get a Riggs in there. I mean, what Cubs right now could ride the L and actually... I was in Tony's Burritos, Damon and Belmont.
Okay.
5 minutes, 10 minutes from the park. Right, South Park. Great, great chicken burrito dinner. Highly recommended. I'm in there after one of the games. There's a bunch of Cub fans in there.
Yeah,
that's Wilson Contreras who's ordering his dinner there. No one knows who he is. I'm like, Wilson, can I get a quick pick here, my friend? Thanks. By the way, interview with Wilson Contreras with yours truly up at WGNRadio.com. We'll have more for you. Talked to Ryan Sandberg yesterday and and my guy, Trevor Cahill.
Hashtag Cahill.
You might hit a little bit of Cahill. So Theo the day before his Bleacher extravaganza, he was talking with the media as well. I was there. I asked him, hey, Theo, are the Cubs the favorites to win the World Series?
There's no team I'd rather be going into October with, there are never favorites in October the same way there are in the regular season. You know, the regular season is, you know, people make fun of me for saying it, but it is a meritocracy. Like that's why it's 162 games long and the best teams rise to the top. And so we're proud of, you know, what we've done in the season so far. And then October is, you can't make the same type of proclamations. It's about, rising to the challenge and momentum, playing your best in the biggest spots and getting your breaks. But it's a combination of, you know, talent, skill, and timing. And there is truly no other group I'd rather go into October with, because I think we're set up to fight those battles.
And I think that's fair, right, Andy? I mean, it's spot on.
You
love your chances in the regular season. You have no idea what's going to happen in the playoffs.
Just ask the Golden State Warriors.
Right. Well, exactly. And baseball's even funnier than that. Mm-hmm. He used a word in there, meritocracy. So I went cross-eyed when he said it. I have no idea what he's talking about. I get the general gist of what he's saying, that I think. But we're going to give you an opportunity for the language experts out there. 312-981-7200. What does Theo mean? What is the definition of meritocracy? If you look it up, you're cheating. Don't do that. Have integrity when you call the show. 312-981-7200. Meritocracy. How does that apply to the Cubs in the playoffs? Your best breakdown of that will give you Lou Malnati's pizza. 312-981-7200.
I mean, he nailed it.
He did, right?
Yeah.
Is there anything in life that you wouldn't trust Theo Epstein to do? Like, if Theo's like, hey, Andy, let me take those incredible finances that you've accrued in your lifetime of doing baseball play-by-play.
I'd let him do that.
Right? You let him do that, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Theo, can you... I got a slight issue with my taxes this year. Can you dive in there on my... Can you call my accountant up? Because I think he's messing things up. Yeah, absolutely.
See, I have a crank in my neck. Can you help me with that?
Interesting. Theo, can I get can you explain to me on how to hire people? Like, how good is it? I guess he's got what they call a flat line. I'm not defining it correctly, but.
There's a baseline.
He wants the intern in the office, if he has an idea. He doesn't want him to have to go to his boss, who'll go to his boss, who'll go to his boss, and then there's one guy that talks
to
him.
Come right to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is, that makes sense, right?
I would agree with you on that. I mean, because you'd be surprised. I mean, this is a guy that came from being an intern in the media relations department with the San Diego Padres to winning World Series with the Red Sox and doing wonderful things right now with the Chicago Cubs.
Now, how does that happen? Honestly.
It's a guy who does the things that you're talking about, which is why I believe that Theo does not turn down any ideas, because he had them. And, you know, every once in a while when you're that young and you're that green in an industry, you have a fear of failure. And you have a fear of going to your boss and saying, hey, you know, maybe we should be doing this. And, you know, he hit on something.
Right.
He was right.
That's exactly what he did. Hey, I think I can help us out here. Would you let me do this? Mm-hmm. And I can show you what I can do. And then bam, and then he's off and rolling.
And you give Tom Werner and those guys who were the owners of the team at that time a lot of credit for listening to a guy who had no basis to really listen to him. Other than that, he was working for free for you.
Hey, this guy's pretty smart. We might want to take him up on this. Let's see what he can do. 312-981-7200. Shockingly, we have a couple phone lines open. Not everybody's jumping in on what meritocracy is. But if you know what meritocracy means, it could mean pizza for you. Luke's going to take a shot at it. We'll see how Luke does. 312-981-7200. What does Theo mean by meritocracy, Luke?
I actually don't know. I'm going to take a guess at it.
Okay.
So, meritocracy sounds like it's a form of the word merit. So maybe he was saying, like, the Cubs can get through the season with some bloopers and losing a few games here and there, but everyone knows that they're a really good team and that they're going to end up winning. So they'll rise to the top in the regular season. And then kind of like what he ended up saying is that It's not the same as the playoffs where it's a 5-game or 7-game.
You're sniffing around Luke.
You're all around the fence line.
Yeah, you're right there,
but you're onto something.
You're, Luke, we love you. Your efforts have been so noted, and we appreciate you dialing us up.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, there you go, Luke, kicking us off there. 312-981-7200. What does Theo mean by meritocracy?
Luke's probably been in a few spelling bees because he broke down the word properly.
That was genius. I don't know if genius might be a little bit hyperbolic, but it was impressive. Luke.
I like that.
Hey, Kathleen, you're next. 720 WGN. Meritocracy. What does Theo mean?
Hi guys, love your show.
Thanks, Kathleen.
I think what Theo means is, during the regular season, teams can really stand out based on the black and white, like statistics, success with your pitchers, how talented your players measure up to be. But then when you get into the off season, and so that all means like, what are the merits of your team? All those kind of black and white measurable factors. But then when you get into the off season, some of those non-measurable, non-quantitative factors can come into play, like, your team may go in and just have a bad game, like some flukes happen, somebody has an error. You know, those unexpected things that combined could make a great team based on meritocracy lose a game. And so in the postseason, those kind of factors sometimes happen and it's random. And so the teams that aren't high on the meritocracy scale, maybe during the regular season, can somehow come in and win games.
All right.
Take out a team that came in at a higher level.
All right, you're kind of sniffing around it too. Can I throw out what?
Sure. Thanks, Kathleen. Appreciate you.
The part of speech, it's a noun. Okay, so it's something.
Yes.
You know, it's a member from Schoolhouse Rock. A noun is a person, place, or thing.
God, it makes me feel good. I like the. Yeah. I love when we go noun, adjective, verb on 720.
Lolly, lolly, lolly. Get your adverbs here.
John Williams should be proud of us right now. Let's. Dan Long says Novak is the closest here. So Novak Djokovic calling the show right now. Novak, bummer on the U.S. Open, but thanks for calling 720 WGN.
Aristocracy is ruled by the aristocrats or elite, and meritocracy would be the ability to rule, and the Cubs ruled based on their achievements or their merits.
I think that's might be as close as we get.
So that is spot on.
Let me give you the Webster
good
dictionary
job, Novak.
Definition here. It says meritocracy is a system in which the talented are chosen and moved ahead on basis of their achievement.
Right.
So basically what it's saying is you don't get rewarded automatically because of what you've done in the past. You kind of wipe the slate clean when you go to the postseason.
Exactly. The point is that yes, judging by everything that's happened to this point, they should be awarded the World Series, but it doesn't work that way. Damn it, that's too bad.
I know. Way to go, Novak.
Hey, Novak, you got Lou Malnati's pizza. Good job, man.
Well, thank you very much. It's my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Can you do it in full Harry Carey voice?
Happy birthday, Novak.
Novak spelled backward is...
Vakon.
Kavan. Bye, Novak. Thank you, brother.
All right.
He's like, yeah, stop that.
Right.
It's his birthday, but you should be nice to him. Hey, we were getting pizza.
Hey, if you didn't win anything and we haven't talked to you, you can stay on the line or call back because you have another opportunity coming back here. We're doing our North Side, South Side report, and what we're going to do here is play a game. What does Andy Mazur know?
You'll find not a whole lot.
Well, in the annals of baseball history, few guys have as much stored in the noggin as you've got up top there.
I wish I could download some of it and make room for some new stuff.
Well, that's a great idea. Yeah. But there's a lot of historic things going on around the Cubs. Yeah. So we're gonna hit on some of those stats and see if Mazur is able to answer where they fall, if that makes any sense. I think you get the point. We're going to do that next. 720 WGN. Hope you're having a great Saturday. I am, because I get to look into the eyes of one Andy Mazur. And you, Dan Long, happy birthday.
Dan Long celebrating
Thank you, sir. Is
Addison Russell's birthday today, 27.
I sent Dan Long a happy birthday Facebook message. Yeah. What did I say on there, Dan? Happy birthday from all of us at the beat?
You said happy birthday from all of us at the beat, including Adam Hoge, as if there was more people than me, you, and Hoge.
Well, there is. I mean, technically, there is. I wanted to throw in somebody. Oh, I was going to throw in Kevin Powell, but apparently Kevin Powell never responded to my friend request on Facebook. I couldn't put him on there.
Nice.
I maybe never made that request, and I need to be friends with KP on Facebook. I'm missing out. But then I called Dan later in the day and said, hey, can you help me with this? And, of course, Dan Long says yes, like he always does, and then I hung up the phone, and then later in the day, I realized that it was Dan Long's birthday, and I called him and didn't wish him a happy birthday. Hashtag terrible guy.
Yeah, I wrote something, because I call Dan Third and Long.
I like that one.
Yeah, I put that on there.
Third and Long. Okay, so here, Andy Mazur, let's see how good you are. Just a little informal Andy Mazur baseball knowledge. If you know any of these, I'm going to be I knew none. I think most people know none.
Okay.
If Andy gets one wrong and you have the answer and you call in and get it right, we'll give you Lou Malnati's.
Okay, perfect. I hope I'm wrong then.
Yeah, Northside Southside Sports, sponsored by Vienna Beef. All right, the Cubs, who were in the postseason last year, have advanced to consecutive postseasons for the fourth time in franchise history.
Okay.
Name the other times. What other years do the Cubs go back-to-back in the playoffs?
Oh, it was 07, 08.
There's one.
And I want to say,
if you get all three of these, I'm kicking you out of the studio. I think you'll get the next one.
I might not get the next one now that I'm thinking about this.
Well, I'll give you a hint on the next one. When did they last win a World Series?
Yeah, it was, it was 07, 08.
Right.
And they that was the first one.
They went 06, 07, and 08.
Now, okay, 06, 07. That's three in a row.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, there's one other one besides this one, right?
Yes. You were not born.
In the 30s.
Neither was I.
It was
neither
in the 30s, right?
Neither were your grandparents. I didn't even know baseball existed.
Oh, it was in the 1879-ish.
1885,
yeah,
1886. All right. I'm bringing it up because just think about what they're doing now. You got to go back
130 years ago.
85, 86 of 1800s, 06, 08, and 07,
yeah.
1900s, one time. The 1800s, one time. The 1900s, one time.
Because they had a stretch of every 3 years in the 30s. It was 32, 35, and 38.
Right.
And then they waited again until 45.
Yeah, their run from 08 to 45 was respectable. They just never won it. And then they died.
Right.
And then
You go back to the spotting, 69 obviously didn't work out. 84, 89,
98, 03, 07, 08. My life just ended. All right. Couple more for you. The Cubs have clinched the division in 146 games.
Okay.
That's the fewest number of games the Cubs have ever clinched the division in the division era, which started
in 69.
In 1969. Very good. As well as the earliest have clinched a playoff spot all time.
Okay.
All right. The previous team to clinch a division with 16 or more games remaining in a season was the 2008...
Yeah. Okay, let me think about the 08 play. So this could be American League or National League, right?
That's correct. Could be any team.
So National League was Brewers, and I know Phillies, because the Phillies won it that year. They beat the Rays, and there was two. Okay, it's a West Coast team. It's a West Coast team.
It is a West Coast team.
It's a West Coast
team. Out of the AL West. I'll give you that hint, too.
And it was not Oakland that year. They were not in it. Texas was not in it that year. It's going to leave the Angels. It's the Angels.
That is correct. Good process of elimination. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the 2008, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim were at that time the Anaheim Angels, if memory serves.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to go all the way back to 08, 2008. That's eight seasons now, team, mm-hmm. for a team that's clinched as early as the Chicago Cubs did this year. I'll give you one more.
Okay.
All right. This speaks to the brilliance of Kyle Hendricks. Kyle Hendricks, who in my mind, he's not going to win the Cy Young, but I think he's had the best year. The guy's been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Kyle Hendricks has allowed three or four or fewer earned runs in each of his last 20 starts. That dates all the way back to May 22nd. Okay, he's got an ERA in those 20 of 1.59.
Okay.
The longest streak by any big league pitcher this season is that's what Hendricks is on.
Okay.
Now, he's the fourth Cub pitcher. These are some good names for you. Fourth Cubs pitcher in the last 30 years to allow three runs or fewer in 20 straight starts.
So the last 40 years.
Yep.
Which would take
last
us...
Last 30 years.
30 years? Okay, mm-hmm. So that would take us back to... My math has never been very good.
The oldest one on here comes from 92.
Okay.
Then we have one from combined seasons 94 and 95. Okay. And then we have last year's Cubs.
So Maddux would have been the 92.
Not the 92.
Really?
Nope.
Was it Frank Castillo?
Frank Castillo was 94, 95.
Okay.
Which is incredible that Frank Castillo ever had a run like that, which should scare you about Kyle Hendricks.
Was Sutcliffe still around back then?
This guy became the number one when a certain guy left.
Yeah, when Maddux left. Oh, man. And he's right there. I can see him.
His first name and last name have the same first letter.
Oh, and I can see him. He's right here in my vision.
He had a decent flowing hair. That would be Mike Morgan.
Mike Morgan, the guy that played like for 50 teams. There's only 30 in the league. He played for 50.
Yeah, and then the other was Arrieta last year. But yeah. That's the run that Kyle Hendricks had.
That's really impressive.
Isn't it? All right, hey, quick timeout. More.
I did okay.
You did. I think you did great. I'm... Baseball stats.
Looking to pat myself on the back.
I was reading this at andymazerstats.com,
yeah, exactly.
Along with Sahad of Sharma and whoever else is.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Right. 720 WGN.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago sports spoken here. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
All of us at The Beat would like to personally apologize to Wilson Contreras, who I interviewed the other day. You can find that at WGNRadio.com, podcast one-on-one. Wilson Contreras, we had his name spelled wrong.
Two L's.
What person spells Wilson with two L's?
The same guy that spells Willie with one L. Like Willie
Montaigne. Yeah, exactly.
I think Wilson Contreras somehow, some way stole the L.
Or Wellington Castillo is
or
one L.
Wellington Castillo.
See, I mean, to me, that's you don't know how to spell. Like, the Wilson Contreras family should be on blast here. You don't know how to spell Wilson.
You might say that they were thinking all the way around that they will have a son. Willson.
Well, and then... okay, fine, Mazur. That's one angle.
Yeah.
But I mean, the same thing.
It's a reach, but it's okay.
So for people who spell Rachel, Rachael, mm-hmm. That's not how you spell Rachel.
That's Rachael.
Yeah, that's not Rachel. That's something else.
Okay.
And Mark, by the way, with a C, should go. Mark with a K, you have a big M,
mm-hmm.
and then you have the big K. It balances it out. M-A-R-C, why are we making this difficult here? You want big M, big K. But we do apologize to Wilson Contreras for spelling his name wrong. I don't know who did that, but it might have been me. So, all right, let's talk playoff roster. Andy Mazur has spent an inordinate amount of time.
Yeah, I've been tweeting these out.
Yeah, so
kind of weekly.
Who's on your playoff roster, Andy Mazur? Because Cub fans want to know who's making this team and who's not making this team. Who will the 25th man be? Because
I come at it from a different angle. I come at it from the angle of in the playoffs, pitching and defense are at a premium. This is when it needs to shine, because you saw what was going on in the playoffs last year when the weather gets a little colder, hot bats kind of cool off a little bit. It's not only because of the weather, but you know, the pitching ramps itself up a little bit.
Right.
I've got a four man rotation. This is for the first series. I'm banking on them playing the Giants at this point. So my thinking is off the Giants with a lot of left-handed bats.
Really don't want to play the Giants. I just want to make sure
I'm just saying.
Cub fans, you should feel fear about the Giants. When you're talking about Madison Bumgarner, you're talking about Johnny Cueto. Those are real concerns. Not that you – I don't that whole fan conversation, now I'm concerned. I don't even know what that means.
None of these teams you should be taking lightly. First of all, the Cubs have had the opportunity to set their rotation. These three teams that are in it right now will not have that luxury because they'll have to throw their best pitcher in a one-game go-home or, you know, win or go-home.
I'll take the Cardinals lightly. Bring it.
Okay. I'll take the Cardinals lightly. Of the three?
Yeah.
I would like them first in, you know, my least amount of worry. The Mets would be my second least amount of worry, and the Giants would be my team I would fear.
Yeah, I still have the Met thing from last year, and I know it's not as real because they're not as strong, but but at the end of the day, I agree with you. The Giants are the most formidable, but they've been real up and down.
Yeah,
but
true.
Baseball playoffs a whole lot different, and you've got Madison, who's been unbelievable in October. Okay, go ahead.
I've got Lester, Hendricks, Arrieta, Lackey,
who looked good yesterday.
Those are my four starters.
Okay,
my bullpen consists of
the Andy Mazur bullpen.
Trevor Cahill.
Mm-hmm. Cahill's on that team.
Carl Edwards Jr. I always want a guy on there that's got previous starting experience that, God forbid, something happens in the first or second inning, the game's not over.
Okay.
You got a guy that can come in that can eat up some innings and at least keep you in it.
Trevor Cahill can do that.
I believe he can.
Put in Cahill. Cahill was great in the playoffs last year for those who don't remember.
#Cahill. Carl Edwards, Hector Rondon, Travis Wood. I've got Mike Montgomery in there now.
I agree.
Especially if it's a left-handed hitting team that you're going to go up against. I like the curveball. I like that that finesse kind of lefty against a hot-hitting and a hard-hitting left-handed lineup, which both the Mets and the Giants feature.
Okay. What about my guy Rob Z?
I've got Pedro Strop, if healthy, Chapman, and Grimm.
I don't know if I prefer Rob Z or Montgomery. Okay. Rob Z's been solid.
He has, but you worry a little bit about inexperience going forward toward the playoffs.
Rob Zastrzyzny, also interviewed and available at WGNradio.com in the next couple of days. I don't think we have that one up yet.
Here's where it gets a little tricky. Here's where it's changed in the last week.
Okay.
I've got the three catchers back. I did not have Montero on a couple of weeks ago. I've got three catchers back. I've got Contreras, Ross, and Montero. Ross, obviously, to catch Lester.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been hitting the ball well. He's been throwing the ball well. And it's his last go-around, so you want him in there.
Plus, if you end up making some form of double switch, it's good to have David Ross there because you could put Contreras out into the outfield if need be.
Defensively, right. Here's where it gets a little more tricky. I've got Baez, Bryant, Rizzo, Russell, and Zobrist as the infielders. But again, you understand, Baez can play all over the field, Bryant can play outfield, so can Zobrist.
Yep.
Okay.
It's the beauty of the Cubby.
This is kind of another interesting point because the last guy on here, I actually only have 24. So I've got a three-man race for the 25th spot. I've got Fowler, Hayward, Soler, if healthy, and Matt Caesar. I've got two guys battling for that final outfield / infield spot, and I've got Albert Almora, who to me, in my opinion, has a leg up on Tommy La Stella.
Why? I don't agree.
Defense in the outfield.
Yeah, but the left-handed bat, they love that left-handed bat, man. I know, I see where you're coming from, but they...
So that's just, again, that's me. And I got Joe Smith kind of knocking on the door because I just don't like him. I don't like his stuff against left-handed hitting teams.
So
I just don't like it.
You're saying, and he was awful, then went on the DL.
And was better.
And then has been better.
He's been much better.
So, it's end of the day, great to have options. You're making the call that if it was your team,
this is just me,
you would put Elmore on there. You're not predicting that.
No. This is all my thoughts based on just, you know, knowledge of baseball, being around playoff teams before, seeing how some rosters get constructed, and there are a few surprises normally because of what teams value going into the playoffs, whether they value depth at a certain position or whether they value the fact that they can put a guy in the outfield late in a game and not have to worry about it.
Right. Right. These are decisions that have to be made by powerful people.
And trust me, when they say they haven't spent a lot of time on it,
that's all they do.
They have.
Joe Maddon has sat in that office with a nice Cabernet and a great flowing hair.
Yeah, off of his Segway from that commercial, you know, running around the aisles of that. Are they an advertiser?
I don't know.
Okay.
The biggest, I think it's fine. The biggest concern for me, and I want to have this conversation with you coming back here. What are you doing? And I had this argument with Dave Ennett on the Steve Cochran show when Dave and Andrea were filling in and I was doing sports. What do you do and how often are you going to play Jason Hayward, who just went through an entire road trip to Milwaukee, Houston, and St. Louis and went over four, over three, over three, over four, over three, over three, over three. Has gotten a couple of hits as of late. I mean, and he got, and the last day of the road trip, he got a couple of knocks against St. Louis. He's hitting .228 on the year. He's rolled out to second base 8,000 times. To me, I'm getting creative in right field. I'm not saying I wouldn't put him out there late innings. The defense, you're winning the game. Okay. Jason Hayward, go play the seventh, eighth, and ninth. I'm cool with that. But I don't know if I'm starting Jason Hayward every day. What are you doing with Jason Hayward?
Starting. Every day.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
Starting every day. I don't even hesitate.
Well, okay. No, all right, let's have this conversation. You start him every day. Over four, game one.
Start him again.
Over four, game two.
Start him again.
Over four. It's a 1-1 series.
Start him again.
So there's no point in time you're not starting Jason Hayward.
All right. Not just because you paid $184 million.
Well, it's please don't make it about the money.
No, right? I'm saying that's not why. First of all, you can't measure defensively what he can provide out
there
in right field.
You have decent defensive options.
You can't measure what he can provide you in the outfield that other guys can't. Okay?
I think they can measure that now.
Second of all, I believe he will shine in the playoffs.
So you're a believer. 312-981-7200. Informal poll.
There's been some things I've seen over the last couple of weeks. I know you're talking about over, but I've kind of gotten more into the whole StatCast, Saber, you know, mechanics and metrics about the whole thing about really, really believing now in exit velocity and believing that a guy is making solid contact. So basically what it does is measures the velocity the bat.
Yeah, how hard are you hitting the ball?
Off the bat.
Yeah.
And the other night, the home run, I think, by Rizzo was 111 off the bat, which is really impressive. And Wilson Contreras had hit the other day, which was 113, which I think was the third hardest hit ball by a Cub player this year. Now, you look at what Hayward's done. Okay, a lot of his hits lately have been the bloop variety. I'll give you that. But look at the outs he's making. It is hard contact. It's been a lot of bad luck. And I get that. And, you know, he's got to address it because he was brought into this club, obviously, to make an impact not only defensively but offensively. But what I've seen lately is a more confident guy. He's quieter at the plate. The feet are not jumping around as much as they were before.
I swear, if I was in Alaska, I'd hear him at the plate. All dancing around, twitching around.
He's not doing it anymore. He's not doing it anymore. And I tell you what, he just looks more relaxed to me. And the swing path is better, and the ball is coming off the bat better.
312-981-7200, informal poll. Very important on the beat. We will deliver this to Joe Maddon. How often are you playing Jason Hayward?
Every day.
Who has been a massive disappointment in year one.
All day, Jay.
Are you playing Jason Hayward? Get the stories that make the city with unlimited digital access to award-winning Chicago Tribune News. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. Adam Hoke from Ryan Field at 4:30. One more segment of the future three-peat World Series champions to be.
Let's get one, okay?
Your Chicago Cubs, 720 WGN. Cubs leading the Brewers 3-1. Arrieta on the mound. See how long he goes today. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Andy Mazur. We're with you till 6:30. Wildcat football at that point in time. The Cats and Duke at Ryan Field. Dave Ennett, Ted Albrecht will have the pregame show and, of course, the game for you right here, 720 WGN. Understatement of the day would be that Northwestern needs a win tonight.
Big time.
At 0-2. And we'll have Dr. Jim Phillips, Northwestern's outstanding athletic director, on at 5 o'clock. for Wildcat Insider. Adam Hoge will preview the Bears and the Eagles coming up right after 4:30. Cubs are here's my let me have you calm me down, Mazur.
Okay. I was the voice of reason for you all last offseason or postseason.
You were. You absolutely settled the deal here. John Lester has been unbelievable, pitching as well as he can possibly pitch.
Agreed.
Right. So I'm the point being is that I'm wondering if that's going to go away. You have to be confident in John Lester, right?
Guy who's been to postseason play before, knows the intensity, knows what to expect.
Right. Kyle Hendricks, who I think experts in the game have slept on this year. I think people who watch the game every day, they don't necessarily believe because he doesn't have the overpowering fastball.
Well, he doesn't have the sexy numbers either. He's not a big strikeout guy. There's very little power to his game at all. But when you look, if you dissect things, and you really look inside, you have to start looking inside because Felix Hernandez, when he won the Cy Young Award, had a 13-12 record.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he had in the area of under two.
Well, exactly. But see, you know, that's the old philosophy about, you know, it has to be a 22-3 guy. It has to win Okay, well, you know, what's run support are you getting on the days that you pitch compared to another guy who might be 14-8 but has an ERA at 2.03, has less hits than innings pitched, has a 3-1 strikeout to walk ratio, and who has now when you look at other numbers, what's the average exit velocity off of him? How's the contact inside the zone and outside the zone? There's a lot more to look at, and when you look at the numbers, the way they're presented, and you brought up one of the bigger ones earlier in the game, in the show, about how the earned runs per outing, and it's not like he's throwing five innings and going to the dugout.
Now that scares me that you're spending time looking at how hard are they hitting the ball, but that's an interesting stat.
But it's not only
what's the answer to that.
Well, it's contact. He's actually getting hit a lot while he's in the zone, inside the strike zone, but they're not hitting it very hard, and they're hitting it to the fielders. But he's pitching to contact is what it's really telling you. He's not looking for strikeouts. He's looking to get quick outs to last longer in a game.
All right, I feel better. I'm just wondering when a team can really scout him and get ready for a playoff start, what that looks like. No one knows, but I think what you just said there makes me feel a little bit better.
Well, you know, the thing, too, he's a smart guy. Obviously,
he's a great guy, a Dartmouth guy.
He's very thoughtful. He's very thought-provoking. And he seems on the outside looking in as a very calm, cool, and collected guy that doesn't really get not that he's inflappable, but he's got some confidence to his game.
He's just solid. He probably gets a great night's sleep every night. Yeah. One way you can probably do that is with MyPillow.
No, you didn't just did you?
I just did that, which has helped over 25 million people get the best sleep of their lives. It's guaranteed. The most comfortable pillow you've ever owned. MyPillow is the perfect pillow for you. If you like more of a firm pillow, go with the premium yellow MyPillow. If you like more of a fluffy pillow, go with the premium green MyPillow. Are you more fluffy or more firm?
More fluffy.
Yeah, I'm all into fluff. Who doesn't love a good fluff? All right, if you like, let's see here. They know pillow style is a personal preference, so MyPillow has created a custom sizing system. Check out their sizing chart at MyPillow.com to find your perfect MyPillow. And they brought back their best offer ever. Right now, you get four MyPillows for the price of one. You buy one premium MyPillow, you get one free, plus two Go Anywhere pillows, all absolutely free. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the promo code WGN. They have a 60-night money-back guarantee. Sleep on it. If you don't love it, just return it. You get your money back. Call 800-299-9579 or MyPillow.com. That's 800-299-9579. Use the promo code WGN. Adam Hoge right after the 4:30 news, 720 WGN.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much an individual decision. You know, I know personally my focus has been on playing the Eagles and what it takes to beat the Eagles. So I haven't really thought too much about the anthem. You know, it really doesn't matter what my view is. I mean, I choose to stand and put my hand on my heart.
That's your Bears head coach, John Fox, talking about the Eagles and what they're going to do on Monday night when they take on the Bears at Soldier Field. Philadelphia planning on making their own statement as far as what's going on in the world, trying to make the world a better place. Adam Hoge makes the world a better place, and he joins us now on 720 WGN. You like that lead in there, Hoge?
Yeah, I don't know if it's true, but I like it. Well, I like where you went there.
We're singing Kumbaya too.
Just run with it. You're doing your own part in your corner of the world, and that's all you can do. So it's your guy Carson Wentz, number 2 overall draft pick, who was a third string quarterback. Then all of a sudden, trades and injuries happen, and now he's leading the Eagles and beating the Browns in Week 1. Are the Bears prepared to make it a rough night for Carson Wentz, Adam Hoge?
Well, I like what Danny Trevathan said. He admitted that Carson Wentz played well in his first game, but he also said they haven't played us yet, right? So there's some confidence there. And I think that, you know, you do have to take into account the opponent, and they were playing the Cleveland Browns. Now, that said, the Cleveland Browns are still a lot better than any team Carson Wentz ever saw in the FCS level of football, right? So he's still making a huge jump up in competition. And he looked pretty good in Week 1, which did not surprise me. You know, I think there's going to be growing pains with any rookie, but I always thought that Carson Wentz was more pro ready in terms of right away in his career than Jared Goff was. I thought Goff had a higher ceiling. I still think he does if he puts things together and develops. But I always thought Carson Wentz was actually the guy that could come in and play right away because of the offense he ran at North Dakota State, which is a pro style offense where he was at the line of scrimmage, making all the checks, making all the reads, going through a huddle, which is something Jared Goff never did at Cal, or at least did not have all that much experience with. So, you know, the early start from Wentz doesn't surprise me. Now we'll see what happens when he plays Vic Fangio, because Vic Fangio, I'm sure, is going to have some things dialed up to confuse the rookie.
Fangio said this week, long-term hell of a quarterback. That was his quote on Carson Wentz. And Jared Goff, since you brought him up, Hoge, the guy doesn't know where the sun rises. He played in Cali, and he didn't know it rose in the east and set in the west. That can't be true. You have to be smart to be a quarterback. Like, there's a lot thrown at you. If you don't know that, I question your ability to play quarterback.
Yeah, and when he said that on Hard Knocks and did not know which direction the sun rose, I seriously was like, man, I wish I had put Wentz ahead of Goff, because I had him. If you remember going back to April, I said it's like literally 1A, 1B. These guys are so close together. I just ultimately went with the higher upside with Goff. But come on, man, that is not a good. I know it's like sort of a joke, and that's what was how Hard Knocks brought it up. But like, he literally did not know what direction the sun rises. Which I don't. When did you guys learn that? Was that like kindergarten?
Yeah, kindergarten, first grade, second grade.
Yeah,
yesterday, but I got it now.
It's okay.
Okay.
He's a better man for admitting that, I guess. Let's stick with growing pains here, and let's talk a little Kevin White, because obviously he looked a little overmatched learning the not only the system, but I guess the routes. What are they planning on doing? Because I know they need him on the field, obviously, to balance things with Alshon Jeffrey on the other side. But are they going to – I hate to use these words, but are they going to dumb things down a little bit for him?
You know, it kind of sounds that way. We talked to Dal Loggins yesterday, the offensive coordinator, and you know, he admitted that as his coach, it's kind of his job to make sure they're not throwing too much at him in terms of that route tree, asking him to do too much. And I just don't think that's a good sign. I know the guy's only played one NFL game, but he's been in this building for over a year now. He went through all the meetings last year, and I understand it's completely different when you step out there on the field, but the guy should be able to run more routes at this point. There shouldn't be – now, it's one thing – I don't think it's the end of the world that he had that problem last week and ran one wrong route and – you know, had that miscommunication with Jay Cutler. That's not surprising at all. You know, as good as Will Fuller looked on the Texans, he's a rookie, first-round pick. You know, he also had that drop, too. So there's going to be mistakes with rookies. There seems to be more of a bigger problem with Kevin White. And he has all the talent in the world, but I think it's important for him to show some growth Week 1 to Week 2, and it's probably the right move for the Bears coaches to kind of simplify things for him. That worries me a little bit.
It is kind of amazing to think, and you did bring up the fact that he was around this team all of last year, and the offense, correct me if I'm wrong, hasn't changed a whole lot from what Adam Gase did. I mean, I don't know about the terminology, but still, you would think a guy that's around it that much, and knowing he's not participating at least would have some kind of a handle on it.
Yeah, and you're right. It hasn't changed a whole lot. Obviously, Dow Loggins put some wrinkles into it, but that was a big reason why they just promoted Loggins, was that they could pretty much run the same system, not change the terminology. That's the key. They didn't change the terminology. So for somebody who's learning an offense, that's one of the biggest things, is that, okay, Kevin White should have had all that down last year. So if he's still having issues in that area, which I'm not sure he is, but if that's sort of the part of the problem, it shouldn't be. And at least should have helped him understand things on the field a little bit better. Again, it's only one game, so I still don't think it's time to panic. But, you know, I wrote this after the third preseason game, too, that there's some concerns. And there's, you know, that was almost a month ago at this point. And so we definitely need to see some improvement here on Monday night against the Eagles.
What was the context early in the week when people are asking Cutler about endorsements and why he doesn't do them? And he says, well, I make enough money playing football. I don't need to do that stuff. I've got a family and kids and time. I would have been looking around the room trying to find somebody who thought that I thought that he was crazy. I don't know what you were doing when he said that, Hogue.
That Cutler was crazy because of his answer?
Yeah. Well,
okay.
I mean,
just that he's kind of turning down free money?
Yeah, you're turning down free money. It's not that big of an obligation. Show up here and stand there and look pretty for 10 minutes, and we'll give you whatever they're going to give him. It's not nothing. Why wouldn't you want to do that?
Yeah, it was interesting. It was kind of a random question from Rich Campbell from the Chicago Tribune, but only random because of the context of the rest of a press conference. I thought, a good question, something that I think we all wonder about from time to time. It was just sort of, it maybe caught everyone off guard, but I don't know. I mean, it's a personal preference. If Jay doesn't want to do that stuff, then that's fine. I would point out, though, that he did do a radio show for, you know, a handful of years where he was getting paid pretty good to show up once a week and spend some time.
How'd that end up?
He stopped doing it, but he also stopped doing it when I think he had it was either when he had the second or third kid. So, yeah, I just have one kid. I can't imagine having two or three at this point. And that's a huge time commitment. So I can relate there a little bit, you want to limit what you're doing, especially because he spent so much time at Hallis Hall and put so much work in at winning football games.
As I judge Jay Cutler's life with absolutely no right to do it, you don't make the money that Jay Cutler does unless Jimmy's paying you a little bit more than I think he is. And there's a lot of help out there for Jay. I understand that he wants to be around his kids, but okay, fine. If I was his kid, I'd be like, that's cool. Go ahead and do that.
Whatever commercial.
Express.
Well, I can't say that I know what kind of offers he's gotten over the years, but it's not like he's going to be doing the amount of commercials that Peyton Manning's doing.
That's
right?
A better question. Who wants Jay Cutler to endorse anything? Would you go if Jay Cutler endorsed chocolate milk? Would I go? I'd probably stop drinking chocolate milk, and I love chocolate milk. No disrespect.
I think locally he could do plenty of stuff here.
Like what? If Jay Cutler said, like, hey, yeah, I'm going to. My favorite
clothing store would be okay. I mean,
what about if he was like, this is my favorite restaurant. Would you go eat there?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
Depends on what kind of restaurant it was.
This is the best Italian steakhouse in the city. I'm Jay Cutler.
I'd still go.
I don't think it would make me go. Hogue, you going?
I'll go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hogue, we'll meet there and we'll tease Carm with all our good chicken parmesan.
Let me get off my weird beaten path right now and ask you, how do they beat the Eagles?
The offensive line protects better, first of all, more than anything else. I think that, and I think they will be better. I think Josh Sitton having an extra week here and Cody Whitehair having an extra week at the center position of practice. I think they'll be better. I think they'll be on the same page a little bit more. I thought in that first game that there's enough weapons there that if they protect Jay and block better in the running game, that they'll be okay. This Eagles team's fine. They're nowhere near as good as the Texans, in my opinion. So, especially on defense. So I think there's going to be opportunities to score some points in this game. On the defensive side, I thought they were fine last week, and they got to get after the quarterback a little bit more. They got to rattle Carson Wentz, a rookie, and if they're able to get one or two turnovers, preferably two, I think they have a really good shot to win this game on Monday night.
Yeah, that was a thing against the Texans too. I kept saying, okay, this is the possession they get the turnover, but they didn't get it.
That's what they needed. That was definitely one of those games where you're the underdog. You kind of felt the tide turn in the third quarter. They still entered the game in the fourth with the lead, but it was only a 1-point lead. And it was just one of those games where you said, all right, if you're going to be the underdog here and come out with a victory, you need the defense to force a turnover here to kind of to flip the momentum. And it just didn't come. So, you know, it was good to see Tracy Porter get an interception on the first drive last week. Mm-hmm. Because that's something they have seriously, the biggest emphasis on defense all offseason has been make more plays on the ball. So for that to happen, the first defensive series was great, but it didn't happen the rest of the game. Although John Fox did point out, and he was correct, that Akeem Hicks did force a fumble in the second half. It just bounced the wrong way, and they weren't able to recover. Sherrick McManus also blocked a field goal. It still managed to go through the upright. So they were very, very close on a couple of those game-changing type plays.
Adam Hogue at Ryan Field, where the Northwestern Wildcats will take on the Duke Blue Devils tonight, pregame at 6:30, right here on 720 WGN. Jim Phillips, the Northwestern Athletic Director, Wildcat Insider, right after 5. Before you go, Hogue, what's your prediction tonight? How do the Wildcats get a win?
Well, first of all, I want to get your take on this. I was walking into the stadium, walked past Mustard's, and there were members of the Duke medicine staff at Mustard's before the game.
It's a great job. Well, first of all, If there's one thing you want to do in life to be healthy, it is have a double cheeseburger and a hot dog. Double cheese includes fries, and then you get the milkshake, chocolate with vanilla, chocolate syrup, and then you're ready for a Wildcat football game. So I think they're doing the right thing.
Well, the Bears did not practice on Wednesday, so I had some extra time after being over at Northwestern's practice. I did get lunch at Mustard's. I missed you, though, Carm. I wish you were there with me. Went hot dog, everything on it with fries. In terms of this game tonight, interesting matchup between two teams that were very competitive against each other last year when we were in Durham. Both teams have lost some key members that I think have hurt them in the first 2 weeks. Duke lost to a Wake Forest team last week that I think is on the rise. Not like Wake Forest can be ranked anytime soon, but it was a decent opponent. However, it was at home. So I think there's got two teams here that are trying to figure things out. I still think analyzing this game, the Cats are still the better team. They're at home tonight. I expect this to be close. It's going to come down the fourth quarter, and I'll give you a tease for the pregame show. This came down to special teams last year with the Cats getting a huge kickoff return to start the second half with Solomon Vault. I think a play like that could determine tonight's game as well.
Adam Hogue at Ryan Field. Hear him from the sideline tonight talking with Fitz and whoever else, all the news of what's going on, and, of course, covering the Bears Monday night. With your Philly Eagles at Soldier Field. No one's ever called them the Philly Eagles ever before.
Until now.
That would be the Philadelphia Eagles. All right, Hoagie, you're the man.
All right, you guys are the men as well, and congrats on the NL Central championship,
thank you.
Carm.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right, Adam Hogue out at Ryan Field. Hey, coming back here, Pat Fitzgerald's having a press conference, and a key thing to do when you're going into a press conference is to turn off all your alarms to your phone, to your computer, unless
it's your watch now, you know.
Right. And sometimes if you don't turn everything off, you don't know where it's coming from. We got some funny audio for you coming back. 720 WGN. So we didn't have a show last weekend, right?
Correct.
And so I didn't get an opportunity to play this audio. I'm at the press conference with Pat Fitzgerald. It was Labor Day. And there's, you know, I don't know, 15 people there working hard on a Labor Day talking to Fitz. And we're midway through the press conference. Teddy Greenstein does great work for the Chicago Tribune, asking Fitz a question. And this is why if Northwestern doesn't win a game this season, which of course they're going to win tonight. If they don't win a game this year, I'd almost make him the head coach of the year just for how he handled this one.
Fitz, did you have any thought on there's no camera on the goal line? So on Western Michigan's fourth down run, the replay booth just does the best it can. Do you think there should be a permanent camera there so they can really see?
Well, I think you're at the whim of what...
Beeping.
Can I get that for you, Lou?
Lou.
That's all right. You ever heard that one before?
It's faster.
We're going to start having to do bag checks before these guys come in here or what? Yeah, we got a clear bag thing for on game day. Jeez, it's pretty good. That's a good question. I want to answer it. I don't want you to hit.
Can't find it.
Yeah, it's great.
Still can't find it.
They're watching you in China right now, though.
Still can't find it. 1 minute.
I like it. But you can stay.
Now
you
he's
can say, Ray, take the bag.
He's leaving the room.
Sorry, Ray, yeah. Come on, Luke, sit down, man. It's your iPad, brother.
Over there.
See your iPad to your left? That would be that iPad right there that you're sitting on. To your left, your left pocket. That's your other left. Your other left. There's an iPad right there. Somebody's missing their iPad. That was totally set up. That was set up on you right there. It
still
went off
going.
10 minutes too late. We were trying to sabotage you, Lou, to embarrass you. No, it's great.
Still going.
Still going.
Yeah. So, it's my understanding, Teddy, that you're at the whim of the network that you're on.
It was unbelievable. I've never seen that.
That's awesome.
I've had my phone go off in a press. Have you ever had that happen to you?
Yeah, one time, and it never happened after that.
When was that?
It was back in the days of Dick Geron. At Hallis Hall. Somebody from the station was calling me to see if I would come on the air with them after the press conference or was confirming something with me.
Right.
And I had the ringer on.
So, yeah. I did it, I think, last season.
Oof.
Madden at the table.
Oof.
Phone goes off. Not a good feeling.
It's bad when
But it takes 3 seconds and you're done.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is, a lot of people now will put their iPhones with recording devices on the table right in front of him.
Right.
So if you have it with you and you've got it by the speaker, you can at least mute it real quick. Now you have to run up to the front.
Now that would be embarrassing.
Yeah, that's bad.
I mean, this was in my pocket. But this was unbelievable. I'm sure Lou does a phenomenal job. I actually really don't know who Lou is. Seems like a fine Lou.
Mm-hmm.
But that was unbelievable. I'm sitting there trying to. So when something like that happens, you're just so happy it's not you.
Yeah, you're like, hey, it's him.
And then it's just enjoyable. Dave Bennett was in the room being very professional as always. I was a fourth grader in the corner. Lou, get it together, Lou.
Hey, real quick.
Yeah.
Are you following at all the World Cup of Hockey?
Very minorly. I know that Duncan Keith is not playing.
No. First game for for Team USA is not going real well. First period, they're down 3-0 to Team Europe.
That's not good.
No.
Mazur, you're...
Jonathan Quick gave up all 3 goals.
Come on, Jonathan Quick. What are you doing? Get it together on it.
Trying to see if you're Patrick Kane, -2, but credited with 4 shots. And also, let's see. Yeah, 4 shots.
All right. 3-0. Come back. Team USA. Quick timeout. After the 5 o'clock news, Wildcat Insider. Dr. Jim Phillips, 720 WGN.
The Wildcats of Northwestern, Evanston, Illinois.
It's time for Wildcat Insider. On the home of Chicago's Big Ten team, 720 WGN.
Tonight's the night. Let's get this season rolling. Obviously, it hasn't been great 2 weeks in, but the Duke Blue Devils at Ryan Field tonight. No time like the present to start a winning streak. Andy Mazur, I'm Mark Carmen. We're with you till 6:30. The good doctor, Dr. Jim Phillips, Northwestern's outstanding athletic director, joining us now as we start our Wildcat Insider. Dr. Jim, I know it's been a tough first 2 weeks. We wanted to check on your mental state here first. I know you're a very positive guy, and I know that you're ready for tonight. But it had to be there had to be a moment in time where you had to kind of like recalibrate a little bit after week 1 and 2.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I thought opening weekend of college football started today. Have I been somewhere other than on this planet or what? You're right. No, I agree with you, Mark. It wasn't, and Andy, it has not been the start we wanted. But this thing's long, the season, and you just see the scores again today.
Yep.
And when you start 60 minutes of football, there's not a lot that separates one team from another. And when I look back at last year when we won 10 games, 7 of those games we won by a touchdown or less. And that's historically who we've been. We've been a really good program that has won the close games. And when you look at the first 2 weeks, we lost opening weekend by 1, and we're getting ready to score a touchdown. We have first and goal at the 6-yard line with 2 minutes to go, and we turn it over. And then last week you saw a field goal as time expired. So all that being said, we have to play better. I really expect us to play better tonight against Duke, and excited about the opportunity.
I was starting to think that I was the jinx because I was at the first two games. I'm not going to come tonight just to see how it works out. So hopefully that will help you guys a little bit. But
I'm glad you told me that, Andy, because we will have Evanston police at the border of Chicago city limits and the start of Evanston from here on out if we take care of business tonight.
If you win tonight, I'm not coming near it. I won't even be near it, I swear. But you brought up a good point, too, because you've got a game tonight, and then obviously the Big Ten season starts, and with all the upheavals that the Big Ten has had today, and it's got to bode pretty well if you get a win tonight on a good note going into conference play.
Yeah, you really need to. And what I like we did, and we always try to do with our non-conference scheduling with Stanford last year and Notre Dame with 2 years ago, we always try to play a pretty strong non-conference schedule. And people, need to understand Western Michigan's a good football team. You see what they're doing again today down in Champaign. Illinois State and North Dakota State, who beat Iowa, are two good programs, and they're going to fight it out for the FCS championship. Playing Duke gets us ready for next week as well, and it really is about trying to win a conference championship, because if you're in the hunt for a conference championship, you're talked about nationally, and that's where our goals always begin and end. And so it's important for us to play well tonight, just not only win, but to play well, and get ourselves ready for Nebraska and the start of Big Ten play.
And since Dr. Jim brought it up, Western Michigan leading Illinois 24-10. They're in the third quarter down in Champaign. Of course, the Wildcats play the Broncos in week one. Dr. Jim, you're around the program so much, and of course you're on the field during the game. You see guys that were hanging their head after losing to Illinois State, which is extremely normal. And I heard from our sideline guy, Adam Hogue, that you were propping guys up walking off the field, say, hey, keep your head up. We got a long season to play. What's it like for you around the student athletes when they have the standard up and down that goes through a season and you lose a tough game at home? I know that's Fitz's job, but you're down there too.
Listen, these are kids, young men, 18 to 22 years old. Nobody feels worse than they do. Sure, we're competitive. We want to win. I want to win badly. But at the end of the day, I want them to have some support and understanding that it's all relative, and the sport of football is a great sport, and that they have a chance every week to go out there and play a game that they love. And so absolutely be disappointed about a performance or about a result of a game, but there's still more football to be played. And that's the thing I love about it, and that's the thing I love about being around young people at a place like Northwestern, because they're high character kids. And they care an awful lot. So that's not a time to pile on or be, negative or critical. It's really a time to uplift and let them know that it's going to be okay and they're going to live to fight another day.
Dr. Jim, I wanted to ask you a more broad question about the entire athletic department. And I'm a big baseball guy, and I was very impressed with the new facility there, the Miller Park. And I know Coach Spencer Allen didn't have the season he wanted to, but you can see things are starting to get in the right direction. And with commitments to facilities, not only does it kind of spur interest from a fan base, but also it really kind of motivates your coaches and your players, doesn't it?
No question, Andy. It's a part of having a world-class institution. And just as if you invest in science buildings and business schools, which we've done here and are doing, I think it's just as important to invest in athletics. It remains the front porch to a university. It's really a great entry point for people to get to know your university as a whole. And it's such a visible area. And so if the front porch looks good, I think there's this idea that the rest of the place looks good. So athletics is important, and facilities is a big piece of it. And you mentioned one of the facilities that we just opened up, nearly $20 million brand new baseball park, Rocky and Bernice Miller Park. We also have our $265 million lakefront athletic center that's going up, and we're probably about 14 months away from walking in there. And then as both of you guys know, as big basketball fans, we made an announcement a few months ago that at the conclusion of this 16-17 men's and women's basketball season, we're going to spend $110 million to renovate Welsh Ryan Arena. So if you think or wonder if Northwestern's all in relative to athletics, that's $400 million plus dollars of new or renovated facilities, which is what the kids deserve. The coaches deserve it. The fans deserve it that come and support us. I can't tell you how incredibly excited I am because that takes commitment from a university, a president like Morty Shapiro, a chairman of the board like Bill Osborne. I can't thank those guys enough for making this happen. But it's exciting because, again, it's an investment in these young men and women that we get a chance to be around.
Okay, so Dr. Jim, let me give you my 2 cents here about the new Welsh Ryan Arena, the renovation. See, I still go to sleep at night dreaming of old Chicago Stadium, which was the greatest place on earth, and I'm so happy that you're renovating Ryan. What am I talking about? Well, Welsh Ryan. It's important that you have some old school smell in there. So don't like completely sanitize the place. Like, let it feel like people have been in there for a while. That's important to me. Can you get that done?
We're going to get that done. We definitely get that done. But I think you bring up a really good point, Mark, and it was part of our research that we did, whether to just build a brand new facility or to renovate one. First of all, we want to be on campus. So we don't want to move, you know, off campus 5, 7, 10 miles away. We want to be in the heart of campus. Secondly, we did a great study. It took us about 14 months, but we went around the country and looked at some great renovations that have taken place, most notably to Allen Fieldhouse and to Cameron Indoor. And so what you're going to see is you're going to see a downsize in numbers. We're a little over 8,000 or so. I think you're going to that number is going to be in the lower 7,000. The seats are going to be on top of each other. Great viewing points from every seat in that arena, concourses, restrooms, concession. Really, the fan amenities is what is driving this project. And so I'm excited about it. I think it will be really loud, and that's one of the things I've told the architects. I want it to be a home court advantage and have great acoustics in there. So I think you're going to be pleased and can't wait to get a shovel in the ground at the conclusion of the season.
Yeah, it's good. Interesting that you say that too, because you know you talk about taking the seating bowl down a little bit. Make it you want to make it an event, and you want to make it an in-demand kind of ticket, right?
Not everybody has this opinion, but going to Northwestern basketball, that's my favorite event in the city.
Awesome.
That's where I'm at. Dr. Jim knows that I'm a little over the top here, and not many people would say that, but I just love it. It's every game's important, and it's just I'm waiting for the day, Dr. Jim. You know this when you punch the ticket to the tournament.
You're coming with. We're guaranteeing you a ticket, Mark. There's no question.
I'm looking forward to it. Hey, we're going to talk to your head women's soccer coach, Michael Monahan, coming back here. So thanks for the time. Good luck tonight, and we'll see you on the field. Give your 100% tonight, Dr. Jim. I know
always
you will,
and
hopefully we can see you win.
You got it. Mark and Andy, great to be with you guys. Go Cats.
Go Cats. Our pleasure.
All right. Tonight.
Quick timeout. We'll bring in Coach Moynihan next, 720 WGN. Wildcat Insider continues. Cats and the Duke Blue Devils from Ryan Field tonight at 6:30. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Andy Mazur. He is Coach Moynihan. Michael Moynihan joining us. The head women's soccer coach, 8-0 on the season. We'll get to that in a second, Coach, but you've got one thing in your bio that's more impressive, I think, than anything else, and that's that your top assistant, David Nikolic, has been with you for more than 20 years, which tells me that you know how to be in relation with people. I can't get people to hang out with me for more than 20 minutes. Andy's tried to leave the show three times today. Can you explain how you've gone about having such a great working relationship with somebody that's obviously important to you?
Yeah, well, David makes it pretty easy. He's a pretty laid-back guy. I think we complement each other really well. There's certain things about the game that I think we see very similarly. We have a similar vision for how it should be played and all of that. But David's, I think, an excellent communicator. He's kind of, when I get a little hot-headed or if I get a little impatient, he's the one that kind of calms things down and brings things together again. So, it's probably more because of David than me. I have to give him the credit maybe, but I do like to keep him involved as well. And I think that's probably something that he's appreciated over the years where he has a lot of responsibility. There's a reason he's an associate head coach. I do defer to him a lot in certain situations, and I take his input very seriously. So I think, we have a good understanding of each other.
Very cool.
Hey, Coach, you're off to a great start. Noticing too now in your fifth season, what's the process been like building Northwestern's women's soccer program back up to respectability?
Well, it's been a long haul. We had some lean years, I guess, in terms of results. But I think from day one, things that I can definitely say I appreciated, the support from our administration and U Athletics has been fantastic. The athletes, I think, have pretty well bought in right from the very beginning. And from the time we started our first practice, the girls were excited about, heading in a new direction and trying to get better. And, we've added depth to the roster. We've added some talent. But all along, they're Northwestern students. They know what it means to work. And I've really appreciated that. So, sometimes it's been a little bit frustrating and sometimes it feels like it's taken a little too long, but I guess I've enjoyed it the entire time, and I feel like we've always been moving forward and we'll continue to do that.
Yeah, but obviously the key is to get some of the student athletes, especially early, to kind of buy in to set a tone or a culture, right?
Yeah, for sure. We had, there were some interesting dynamics. And I don't think it was necessarily, character or anything of people. It was just some habits that people had that weren't really in line with what you would see an elite team doing. And that is one thing that a lot of the players, that were here when we arrived, they really bought in and they started to understand it. And that's probably one of the things I'm most proud of is the class that was freshmen when we first arrived. By the time they were seniors, there was so much improvement and so much change in the chemistry and the culture of our team. And those kids led the way. They're the ones that kind of got it started for us. And we started to see the success on the field as well.
Coach, is Tom Waddell's daughter on your soccer team? Is that accurate?
She was. She was actually at our game the other night. Georgia came back. She's been done now last year, 2 years ago is when she finished. So.
Okay. We're getting texts on that, so I figured I'd bring it up. You've got, you're 8-0, and you've had eight different goal scorers in all eight games. The balance, did you expect it to be that way?
Well, it's what we were hoping for. I didn't know what to expect heading in, but we were hoping for pretty balanced scoring. We knew that scoring was something that was going to be really important for us. We lost our leading scorer, and one of our key midfielders, Nikki Sebo, who had done a lot to generate, attack for us. She was, done with her playing, and that was going to be a big hole for us. So Brenda Oliveira has really stepped up. She's only a sophomore, and she's kind of taken a lot on her shoulders. But then, we've gotten, as you said, well-rounded scoring from other places. So we have to hope that continues.
Okay, obviously you have to score goals to win, but it certainly helps when you're not allowing goals at all. I mean, this is an impressive little run you guys are on here defensively, and I'm obviously a tip of the cap to your goaltender as well, right?
Yeah, she's got the record now. She's only, we're not even quite halfway through her junior year, and she's already got the record for shutouts at Northwestern for women's soccer. The team just set a record for most shutout minutes consecutive, like 536, 38, something like that, minutes consecutive without conceding a goal. So that surpassed a record that has been held since 1997. So quite an achievement. I think the defending starts from the very front of the field, and it's something that we emphasize a lot, that the energy of the forwards is really important in establishing a tone. And then, of course, all the way back to our goalkeeper, she's really something else. She's a very calm, collected person, and some fantastic athletic ability.
536 minutes and 39 seconds, Coach. But who's counting? Just want to.
Yeah, there we go.
that
hopefully it keeps going up.
Absolutely, that's not bad. You played in the Big Ten at Wisconsin. Now coaching at Northwestern. How has your opinion changed of what the Wildcats were then when you were a player to like being involved with the university as the head coach now?
Well, that's a tough one. Back when I was playing, Northwestern soccer was not, it wasn't being mentioned, with any of the teams. And then Coach Lenahan's come in and done an unbelievable job with the men's side and really elevated that program. I don't even think they had a women's, no, they didn't. They didn't have a women's program at that point. And Northwestern athletics in general, the whole image and profile has changed dramatically. It was I don't know. In a lot of the sports, it felt like Northwestern was near the bottom of the Big Ten and kind of the team that a lot of other teams were relishing playing, and now it's entirely different. You know, every team is a team to be reckoned with.
Coach, you're a part of that. Congratulations, and thank you for taking time on Wildcat Insider on 720 WGN.
All right. Thanks for having me. Go Cats.
Absolutely. Coach Michael Moynihan joining us here at 720 WGN. Cats women's soccer 8-0 to start the season.
It's amazing. Defensively, the run that they are on right now, that's unheard of.
I should have played more soccer in my life. I think I would have been halfway decent at it. I could have played.
You sure about that?
I have a moderate confidence / inflated opinion of my abilities, yes. Quick timeout. Coming up after 5:30, we'll get back into football. We're gonna talk about the safety of the game with the man who develops the helmets, how they're making the game safer should your kid be playing football. That conversation after 5:30 on 720 WGN. Hey, it's 720 WGN. He's Andy Mazur. I'm Mark Carmen. Cubs in deep trouble.
Down 6-3.
They can't take away the division title, can they?
No.
You still got to get that home field, though, so wins are still moderately important. Hey, college football, if you're interested, Michigan has come back from 21-7 down after one quarter to play. They lead Colorado 38-28 in the fourth quarter. Nebraska and number 22 Oregon in a great one, too. The Ducks were winning, now not, as the Cornhuskers trying to get to 3-0, 28-26, early going in the fourth quarter there. And the Western Michigan Broncos on top of Illinois, 24-10. Let's bring in a man who knows a little about football. He's the director of marketing for Shut Sports, Glenn Beckman, who Shut Sports makes helmets, trying to keep people safe. And he joins us now on 720 WGN with the new technology. Glenn, what's the latest? What are you guys learning? How are you making the game safe? My partner here, he coached youth football. He's got a bunch of questions for you coming up in a second. What would you say?
All right, that's awesome. Well, you know, Mark, we're always looking for, different materials to try to make helmets out of, different ways to combine different technologies. In reality, a helmet is really a helmet. It just looks a little bit different on the outside. What really matters is what's on the inside. And what we've done is we've taken a lot of different approaches with the different technologies that we put inside our helmets. And we use what's called thermoplastic urethane cushioning, or TPU cushioning, inside our helmets. It's a big, long, fancy word for injection molded plastic. So instead of foam that you guys might be familiar with having played in, we use this plastic that's formed into these cushions, and it does a better job of absorbing more impact across a wider variety of temperatures than any other helmet on the field. So we're getting better at absorbing impact, but in terms of specifically reducing the risk of concussions, you know, that's really a very tricky thing to say, and we really don't think that any helmet can truthfully claim to be better than any other, because there are so many things that go into making concussions, and there are a lot of things that helmets can't do anything about. And so what we focus on is better fit and better technology inside the helmets.
Yeah, Glenn, kind of feeding off of that, when you said, you know, no technology, if you don't know how to use the helmet properly, and if a coach doesn't teach you the proper method of tackling and the way to the heads-up football that's being taught all around the country, it doesn't make any difference, does it?
No, yeah, and you're exactly right. And there's a couple of things, Andy, that you're referring to that are very, very important, and that is the concept that it's going to take a village for us to fix this issue. We have to make the best equipment that we can, and we are dedicated to that. Referees have to call the game the way the rules are written and get the heads out of the play and penalize players that put the head in the game. The players in the NFL have to realize that what they do is an inspiration for everybody below them, and they've got to learn that the game is tackling and not launching themselves at each other like missiles. The media has to stop glorifying these very violent but illegal hits and things like that. So that's a big part of it. We all have to do a part to try to make this better and to make the game safer for these kids playing. And you're right. If they're not taught the right way, if they're not taught that getting their head out of the play is in their best interest, then, yeah, that's a big part of it. And the other thing, especially for youth football players where they don't have equipment managers per se and coaches and guys who are dedicated to fitting helmets, the most important thing about any football helmet is that it's fitted properly. And I fitted thousands of helmets in my life, and if I can't get a helmet of ours to fit on a kid right, I put him in one of our competitors' helmets because it's that important.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, I was kind of learning on the fly last year about how, you know, a helmet is supposed to fit. And the one thing that we've noticed, and I've noticed over the years with park district teams and with youth football, you know, all across the country, Glenn, is, you know, their parents are concerned about, you know, obviously injury, and that's the number one reason. I think the numbers have dwindled a little bit. Does this kind of give a parent a little bit more hope, though, that there are companies like yours that are out there trying to get ahead of this stuff, adding on to all of the other things that are supposed to be taught at that level?
Well, you know, part of my job, Andy, is to try to make sure that everybody has the right information. And you're right, there is a slow decrease in participation at the youth football level. And we as a company, and me personally, would never look a parent in the eye and say, you're wrong, because that is a deeply personal decision for every parent as to whether or not they want their child to play football, boy or girl. It's really up to them for what they consider to be a worthwhile risk for their players. And we won't sugarcoat it. We can't get rid of all risk from the game of football, but you can't get rid of risk from anything. And so, you know, for every parent, that's a personal decision that they have to make. And we just want them to have the right information and to make sure that they understand that in some respects, and in fact, I would say many respects, football is safer than it's ever been. We're making better helmets. We're making better protection, but we're also getting better at recognizing the injury, and we're getting better at diagnosing and treating the injury. So what many people don't realize is that almost everyone can recover from concussions. The trick is to make sure that they don't get back on the field before that first injury is healed properly. And we're getting better. The athletic trainers and the medical professionals are getting a lot better at doing that.
Glenn, is there any talk about, because some people think that the game would be safer, you know, with a different helmet, a smaller helmet where it can't be used as a weapon. Are you guys working on anything where it's kind of a smaller version of what you do but could be just as safe?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And in fact, we are, but I don't think quite in the way that you're thinking of. So all of our players at the professional and college level, and it trickles down to the high school level even, they want, just like everything, they want bigger, stronger, faster, lighter. And so we actually are working on smaller profile helmets that still perform as well as the bigger helmet, so to speak. And in fact, we just introduced a couple of new helmets, the Vengeance Z10 and the Vengeance Pro helmet, that we've had almost, in fact, I think we're over 10% of the players in the NFL have switched to just since it was introduced in January. And it's because it's lighter. The Z10 is a little bit over 3 pounds, and that's 50 to 70% lighter than a lot of other helmets on the field. And so, yes, they do want – we are making smaller helmets, but it's I don't think it's quite for the reason that you're thinking of. And we often get that question. I get that question frequently. What if we had different helmets, or what if we got rid of helmets altogether? You know, the rugby question. And I think the answer to that is we would simply be exchanging one set of injuries for another. We probably would see a decrease in concussions, but we'd see a whole lot of injuries the way we used to 8 years ago before helmets became popular and then mandatory.
Glenn, give us an idea of how much time it takes from idea to marketplace. Is there a typical time frame? I mean, how much testing goes into things of that nature before you actually put it on the market?
If it's a completely new design, it's going to be over a year, Mark. The two helmets that we just introduced were sort of offshoots of an existing design. So that we've got that into the marketplace in about 4 to 6 months. But if it's a completely different design, it'll take well over a year.
Glenn, good stuff. Your website is shutsports.com, S-C-H-U-T-T sports.com. And on Twitter, if you want to follow along, at Shut Sports, and you got some cool pics of work that you guys are doing with Wyoming, yeah. Some of the other schools as well. We've seen your helmets in here. They're sweet. You guys do a great job. So
thanks.
Good. Hey, great work, and do your best to keep them safe. It's a dangerous game. I think everybody should sign a waiver when they play football. Hey, football is dangerous. I like to do dangerous things, and I'll wear the Shut Sports helmet and hope for the best. We know that it's made with great integrity and the finest of qualities and all that. But this is a dangerous game. People, yeah. You know, people like to jump out of airplanes. They like to do different things. That you only live once. You want to play football, and you're old enough. I don't recommend it for a 5-year-old, but if you're 15, you want to play, I get it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it is a dangerous game. It's a game of collisions. It's a game of violence in many respects. And so but it has a lot of positive effects on the kids that play the game. And that's why we're so adamant about our love of the game. But we do want to make it as safe as we can, but with the acknowledgement that we can't get rid of all the risk. There's right. No way yet.
Right. Hey, Glenn, thanks for the time.
You bet, guys. Appreciate it. Always
thanks,
great to be on in Chicago.
Our pleasure. Glenn Beckman, Director of Marketing, Shut Sports, SCHUTT Sports.com. Did you play football when you were young?
I didn't play football. And, you know, last year was basically the first year that I ever got involved in coaching a football. And realizing that, that's why, you know, I asked Glenn about the question, you know, the helmet can only do so much. If coaches at certain levels are stressing winning over teaching proper technique, there's a problem. Because, you know, I mean, I know that everybody wants to win, but in this day and age of participation trophies and things of that nature, and, you know, ice cream sundaes when you get blown out, I mean, it really shouldn't matter. It's so imperative and so important for coaches and park districts and other organizations that support football have coaches that know what they're doing and know how to teach it properly so that these kids can help avoid that injury.
No doubt. No doubt. All right, quick timeout and more football ahead for you as we'll take a look around the National Football League. Our guy Matt Verderam, fan-sided, the director of their NFL content, is joining us next. Nobody knows the game like Verderam. He predicted on this very station the Bears were going to end up with Josh Sitton, which they did. Verderam is next, 720 WGN. It's 720 WGN. This is The Beat. He's Andy Mazur. I'm Mark Carmen. We're with you till 6:30 tonight. Wildcat pregame taking over. Then Dave Ennett, Ted Albrecht from Ryan Field, the Cats, and the Duke Blue Devils. Let's bring in our guy, Matt Verderam, director of all things football, fansided.com. Hello, Sir Verderam. Interesting stuff going on in Buffalo. We'll get to that in a second. But big game in the NFC North this week with the Vikings and Green Bay. And, yes, it's super early, but Minnesota looks like they're not dead, even with Teddy Bridgewater being injured. And Green Bay survived on the road last week. This one is one to watch this weekend, no doubt. How do you size up so far the Packers and the Vikes?
I think the Packers played well in Jacksonville. They won 27-23. Rodgers only threw for 199 yards, but he really didn't have to do much more than that. You know, the Packers were able to win the game playing good defense, which is something they're going to have to do if they're going to make a Super Bowl run. As far as Minnesota goes, and they beat the Titans, but there are some issues offensively. They didn't score an offensive touchdown. They needed Eric Kendricks to have, a 75-yard pick six. You know, Minnesota's probably going to start Sam Bradford on Sunday. And they're going to need him to throw for some yards if they're going to beat the Packers, even though it is in Minnesota.
Let's switch and go to Buffalo and the mess that is the Rex Ryan era so far. You know, 2 games into the season, he's firing his offensive coordinator under a difference of opinion. Wouldn't that difference of opinion have reared itself earlier than, you know, say, game two?
You know what? I think with Buffalo, it's really a disgrace what's going on. Like Greg Roman last year, they were the 13th-ranked offense in the NFL. They scored 31 points on Thursday night. Now, granted, they did have one touchdown come from the defense, but the offense wasn't the problem against the Jets. It was giving up 500 yards to Ryan Fitzpatrick-led offense. You know, if I'm Rex Ryan, I'm looking at my brother and saying, maybe I shouldn't have made that hire. I'm looking at myself and saying, what do I have to do to fix this? I think he knows that he's going down to ship at the end of the season. They've got the Cardinals and the Pats up next. They're going to be 0-4. And I think this firing of Roman was simply just to buy himself a little bit of time, maybe give himself a scapegoat, because, frankly, Roman is not the problem in Buffalo.
Matt Verderam, All Things Football, 720 WGN. So Matt Forte, Verderam, who many Bears fans wanted to still be a Chicago Bear, even though he's on the quote-unquote wrong side of 30, 52 carries, 196 yards, two games in with the New York Jets. Those numbers aren't too bad, almost 100 yards a game, three touchdowns I might throw in there as well. Looks like Matt Forte can still play a little bit here, Matt Verderam.
Yeah, he can. He can. And you know what? The Jets have rode him hard the first 2 weeks of the season. They've really relied on him. He's been the focal point of the offense, and they're going to need him to be because, quite honestly, that offensive line struggles a little bit at times. They do have some excellent receivers. But Forte can play. Look, Chicago moved on because they want to play Jeremy Langford. They want to go younger. And that's understandable. The Bears aren't going to win the Super Bowl this year with or without Matt Forte. So I get why they went on in a different direction. But Forte can still run and pass, or excuse me, run and catch. He's still a very useful player. He's not going to run for 5 yards a carry anymore. He's not going to go for 95 receptions. But he can absolutely help out a good team, and he's doing so with the Jets.
We've got Northwestern football coming up here in just a few moments, and obviously everybody here in the Chicago area that wasn't looking at the Bears, we're looking at Denver the other night with Trevor Siemian and the guy that obviously started a few years here at Northwestern. You know, in your opinion, is he kind of a placeholder here for Paxton Lynch, or is this a guy that can lead Denver back to the promised land?
Siemian did a real nice job week one. I know he threw a couple of interceptions, but to be fair to him, you know, I thought he played a very solid game for a guy in his second year starting his first NFL game. That being said, he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. I don't even think he finishes the season as a starter. Look, he's got a high floor, which is good for an NFL career, but he's got a limited upside. He doesn't have the strongest arm. I don't think he's anybody who's ever going to be a franchise quarterback. But I think Trevor Siemian is the kind of guy who can have a Todd Collins type of career, maybe play 12 years in the league, be a backup, spot starter some places. He can play football, and I think he did a nice job against a very good Carolina defense.
What are Bears fans going to see from the Eagles starter Carson Wentz on Monday night?
Well, you know, Wentz come into the league, the big knock on him was he wasn't all that accurate. He looked incredibly accurate against Cleveland, threw for 278 yards, a pair of touchdowns. I think, you know, Wentz probably doesn't replicate that performance. The Bears defense is better than Cleveland's defense. You know, this is a road game. It's on Monday night. There's more pressure. But Wentz is a good quarterback. The Bears are going to have to generate some pressure. Maybe you see something out of Leonard Floyd in this game. You know, the Eagles, they're going to want to throw the ball early and often. Not a great running game. They got a pretty good offensive line there. So if I'm the Bears, I'm looking to make sure he doesn't beat me deep as he did with Cleveland a few times.
And lastly, Verderam, Jimmy Garoppolo, the Eastern Illinois Panther, looked awful good for the Patriots in game one. And, of course, Tom Brady probably will play until he's 45. He's playing catch with Jim Harbaugh the day before Michigan took on Colorado, and he's probably eating kale right now and stretching out, and he wants to play forever. What kind of value can Jimmy Garoppolo drum up for himself here in 4 weeks of play if he plays well? And, I mean, 1 week in, it looks like he might actually be somebody that a lot of teams will look at.
You can drum up quite a bit of interest. Look, you know, quarterbacking in the NFL, it's a prominent position. In fact, it's probably the most prominent in all sports. And if he plays well the next 3 games, if he even plays the way he played against Arizona, which was good. It wasn't great, but it was effective. Obviously got the win. You know, New England's going to get offers for a first-round pick. Probably one of those offers coming out of Chicago. He is a good young player. He's got a good arm. He's got great pocket presence. I see Garoppolo as a guy who – the Patriots are going to have to make a decision. Look, his contract's up after next year, and they're going to have to decide. Do they want him to succeed Brady? And if not, then they're going to probably move him, and if he plays well the next 3 games, they're going to get a first-round pick for him.
Wow. That's nauseating. if you hate the Patriots, get a first-round pick and have Tom Brady. Matt Verderam, fansided.com, their director of all things NFL. Verderam, thanks for the time, man.
No problem, Carm. Take care.
There he goes. Matt Verderam, our guy. You'll be hearing from him all season long. I like the East Coast flavor that he brings to the
– Well, there were some big stories that were going on.
Yeah, no doubt.
If you're an NFL fan, I mean, the whole thing with Rex Ryan, he's exactly right. That's an embarrassment. That's a proud franchise. That's a franchise that went to four straight Super Bowls. Didn't win them, but you know, went to four straight Super Bowls under Chicago guy Marv Levy. And now you look at the disaster that's become the Bills.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Poor city of Buffalo. Can't they just have one? Can't you have a quality NFL team? Think about those people living in Buffalo.
I mean,
it's no way to go about your life.
It's a great football Sunday environment, though.
It is, sure, I guess. I don't know. I kind of like when they play in Toronto. Quick timeout. Hey, if you're a passionate Bears fan, you want to stay tuned for what's going on after 6 o'clock. We'll explain next. 720 WGN.
Now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
720 WGN. Wildcat football coming up at the bottom of the hour. Andy Mazur doing a great job sitting in today for Adam Hogue.
It's been fun.
It has been fun.
We've covered the gamut.
We have
run the gamut.
We've rolled strong, and we'll continue to do so. My friend Joseph Ryan Martinez in studio.
How you
doing? One of the more talented people I've ever met. Is that too much for you?
No, that's accurate. That's dead on.
There we go.
Just like you wrote it.
I got the script right here. So you're putting together a documentary that you've been working on for over 10 years. And it's a story about the Chicago Bears superfans. Was this like Mike Ditka, Duh Bears inspired? But you're actually like looking for really, I guess, people that sort of live the team and have relationships, like father-son relationships around the team. Am I accurate about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it started to, and you're right about your prediction, like it started off being about, the 85 team, Bears in general, all this, all the cool fodder around the Bears. And as years went on, and I have a background in filmmaking, I had this vision for this film when I was a film student at Southern Illinois. I started meeting fans. I would go to Green Bay. I'd go to down here, 31st Street. I'd meet these fans, and they were fun. They were cool, but there was a certain brand of fan that had these really cool backstories. They either had a dad that, held them on their shoulder and when they took them to like the Super Bowl and in 85 and or 86 and they had really cool, valuable, vulnerable stories. So I started zeroing in on these fans. And I'll tell you what, you get one of those for every 150 you meet, people that will at least open up about their background. So the film's about those specific fans.
Did you have any idea it was going to take this long to do? I mean, the Bears have fans not only here, obviously in Chicago, but everywhere. People get displaced or they move.
Yeah.
But the stories remain the same. I mean, it's always about that, my dad got me into this. His dad got him into this. Kind of like in baseball, but, more so in the NFL. But did you have any idea it was going to take this long to get this film ready to go?
No. I mean, for the past, I think like 7 years ago, I was like, it'll be done. By the end of next season, it'll be done. By the beginning of next season, it'll be done. So no, to answer your question. And you know what? I've learned a lot as a filmmaker. I guess it's been a learn of both paths as far as following sports and also just how to make a film.
You are also touching on your own story around your late dad as well. Speaking to that, as far as was that the main motivation? You wanted to sort of share that story or find people that had similar experiences? What would you say?
Yeah, no, exactly, Mark. So my dad, when during the 85-86 season, my dad was he was on disability. We would sit on the side of the road when my mom was working, and he would play the Super Bowl Shuffle, and he would play the lines, and he would ad lib his own, I was five at the time, like 5 year old lines. My name is Sweetness. He'd turn the volume down and say, and I wear pink pants. And I was like 5 years old, and it was like so funny to me. It was hilarious. So we had these moments, and then through a handful of upsetting situations, my dad just disappeared. And he ends up coming back, but the film covers this. And from, again, I was born in 80. From 80 to 85, anyone knows, they were building their team. That momentum really began to build because they were coming out of a really crappy slum, late 60s and 70s. So I was there while that momentum was going on, watching my dad celebrate this team. So that left a distinct impression on me as a five-year-old. And even though he wasn't around, that I just didn't even have a choice, to be a fan or not. I was committed.
How have you sought out the fans? I mean, if you just, like you said, you go around town. I mean, is it somebody wearing a Bears shirt at a game that you say, okay, you see them walking with, you know, a dad or a grandfather, and you say, these guys might be somebody that I want to talk to?
Absolutely. Well, when we first started doing this, we just walked to the tailgating lots. They were in all sorts of garb, all sorts of vehicles, and we had a camera, and they were excited to be on camera. But you know, you got to do some casting, you got to do some fielding, because some people are, everyone's excited on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Everyone's excited on game day. You know, they've cocked back a few drinks, everyone's grilling. But when you try to follow up, you know, and hey, I'm making this film, I need you to talk about, you know, your grandpa or something who is a diehard Bears fan. It doesn't happen turnkey, you know. So it takes a while. Like I said, probably one for every 150 fans I met became someone who I was gonna follow, and they were gonna work their way into the film.
If you want to jump in here, 312-981-7200, you can pitch yourself to Joe right now, and who knows, maybe you could end up in what's good. This film's going nationwide. I can feel it. You've got Tim DeBus Shanley. You've got Rick Patera. Tell me about Mackenzie Holmes, a U.S. postal worker by day, by night in the profession. He's a professional roller skater, and then on the weekends he's your diehard Bear fan.
Yeah, Mackenzie's got a beautiful story, man. You know, he's kind of got a traditional, raised by a single father from the south side of Chicago. They moved all over the city, and sports kept him and his family together. Him and his four brothers. They could easily make half a team or a whole basketball squad, you know, if they needed to. So Mackenzie was very close to his brother Champ. They were close in the ranking of the four of them. And, you know, when we started, it was Mackenzie talking a lot about Champ. And since the film, you know, as the film went on, Champ, you know, had a nasty bout with cancer. And that, you know, of course, affected Mackenzie's life. So all of it's in the film. But, you know, beautiful, beautiful soul, beautiful stories.
How do you get these guys to open up? I mean, people don't want to tell those stories to their friends, let alone some random guy who's doing a film on them. Obviously, you got to build some rapport.
Yeah, I mean, there's a careful and poignant casting process. If I had to do this again, you're looking for someone. You just start there. Who has a cool story? Who has, you know, a sibling, a relative that means a lot to them that were influenced by watching the Bears? So you kind of start your pool there, and then you begin the conversation, engaging, and you can read people.
Yeah, has social media helped you in this respect too? I mean, with the fact that you're able to kind of reach out now, and people are more apt, I think, to probably reach out on social media than they would be maybe even in person.
Yep, you nailed it. So yes, social media has been a great aid. You know, Tim the Bus has his own website. Glenn Timmerman, Tat Man is his nickname. He's got his own website. It was easy to find and locate these people. But also, to your point, there's people that will, you know, they will rattle off Bears, you know, comments and their opinions all day long, but you'd be damned if they're going to, return a phone call. Right. So it's a blessing and a curse.
What's the next step here? If people want to contact you, I know you're looking for a couple more investors as well, or one with a significant coin that would work as well. And maybe people want to be involved in the film. How would they get a hold of you?
So the name of the website is, of course, josephryanmartinez.com. The film is featured there, josephryanmartinez.com. And I probably don't give phone numbers on over the air, right?
Yeah, you won't want to do that.
Yeah, I want to avoid that.
I give Mark's phone number. Or I can be emailed, joe@mccoymeyer.com, joe@mccoymeyer. That's M as in Mary, mccoymeyer.com.
See, if you were doing this on the Bulls, and we could talk Jordan era, I would nominate myself. And I was, you know, a Peyton over the top guy back in the day. Get to work with his son now, Jared. But, you know, did you do that back in the day? Were you a Peyton over the top guy?
Oh, yeah. Just to put the cushions down over the couch and jump over every Sunday.
It was the greatest.
There's a narrative project I have in mind about the era, and it ends. The end of the narrative I have, it's a screenplay. I've kind of wrote an outline for it. It ends right in the early 90s when that era begins, because it's kind of my bookend to the story about the Chicago Bears, that Bulls era.
It was the best. It was the best.
It was amazing.
Hey, good luck, Joe. Great to have you in here.
Thanks, Mark and Andy.
Nice to meet you.
We're looking forward to the finished product.
Yeah, thanks a ton.
Any way we can support, we're, I mean, I will go to the end of the earth to find the next great Bears fan that's going to be on this thing. We'll see if anybody jumps in. 312-981-7200. If you have a story, we'll pass you along to Joseph Ryan Martinez.